Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Keep this frequency clear.
Welcome to the party, pal!
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal, and a happy new year.
Coming at ya! Welcome to a new edition of Amp Radio, another MMA podcast. We're coming at you live and unedited from the mean suites of San Mateo, California, Brantford, Ontario, Canada, and of course, Waco, Texas. Here we go, guys. We're going to actually go into this, the year-end event for us. Of course, tomorrow we're going to have our party, so welcome to that one. Smack My Picks Up UFC 207 at the T-Mobile Arena in Paradise, Nevada. I mean, Las Vegas. Technically, it's Paradise, Nevada. Don't ask me how the heck that goes. So we're going to go into this, guys. And of course, we're going to get into the MMA this year. What was and what will be. But before we go that, let's meet my colleagues. Let's go up to the one and only Brantford, Ontario, the mean, icy streets of Brantford, Ontario, Canada. Hit it.
Wazza!
And yes, it is frozen up here, Tony.
Wazza!
You know what? Why don't we do that more often? Boy, oh, well, you know what? That's because it's only a Marco thing. That's fantastic. Now, let's meet the star, guys. The one and only, the man who puts the up in what's up. The one and only, Marco from Waco.
Marco from Waco. Happy winter solstice to all the pagans and weekends. On this New Year's, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate.
Happy Kwanzaa, right? For those that, I'm not sure I really know what that is. Hang on.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal, and a happy
Thank
New
you.
Year.
All right, guys, let's get into it. You know what, guys? Let's get into UFC 207, even though it's a couple weeks away, and I got to be honest with you guys. I'm hoping, Marco, really hoping that there are no major changes going on in that card. But let's get into it, guys. Here we go. Smack My Picks Up UFC 207 at the T-Mobile Arena. We're going to go into five fights. We're going to go welterweight Johnny Hendricks versus Neil Magny, Dillashaw versus Lineker, Fabricio Werdum versus Cain Velasquez, or as they say in the U.S., Velasquez. Dominic Cruz versus Cody Garbrandt, and the one and only Ronda Rousey versus Amanda who? Nunes. Boy, I'll tell you guys, if you look at those promos, apparently nobody knows who the champion is.
Who the fuck is that guy?
Apparently so. All right, guys, let's get into it. Right? Am I right, Marco? I mean, this is crazy. There's absolutely not. She's a champ. I mean, this is crazy. Well, let's get into it. You got it. We go into the one and only Johnny Big Rig Hendricks, 33 years young, guys, 17-5. Hendricks, who struggled to make weight at times, but let's be honest, all the time, is 2-4 in his last six fights. The veteran and former UFC welterweight champion with an extensive, obviously, wrestling pedigree. I mean, he's amazing. Goes up against one of my favorites, Neil Magny, 29 years young. The tall, rangy fighter is 18-5. Magny is 3-2 in his last five after winning three straight at 11-4, guys, in the UFC. Recent wins over Lombard, Gastelum, Eric Silva. Well, who hasn't beat Eric Silva recently? And recent losses to Larkin and Maya. No shame in that game, fellas. A veteran who served our country, just like Marco from Waco. We go to the star himself. Marco, what you got?
Oh, man. If this fight was 2 years ago, it would have been all over Johnny Hendricks, man. But I don't like Johnny Hendricks' mental space. You know, he got owned by Gastelum. He got owned by Wonderboy. And now he's talking about retirement. If he cannot beat Neil Magny, he will retire. You know what they say, man? Your head is not all the way in the game. You might as well just get out. He always struggled making 170. You know, he shaved the beard, so all his power is gone. and I like where Neil Magny is. I mean, Nick Magny is a good mental space. I mean, like, there is no shame of losing to Lawrence Larkin and Demian Maia, you know. He's a more consistent guy. He's always fighting. He never struggles with the weight. And I think, for lack of a better word, he's the most disciplined fighter. I think Neil Magny is not going to get out wrestled by Big Rick. He'll be able to scramble, and he'll be able to decision this guy. I'm going to give the former champion the respect of winning one round, so I'm going to quote 29-28 Neil Magny.
Wow. We go to the man in the frozen tundra, Prados.
It's definitely frozen, and trust me on that. So Johnny Hendricks versus Neil Magny. This is going to be a good fight, guys. Like Marco, I am very concerned about where Johnny Hendricks is. He has not looked good at all. He had his steakhouse closed down a while back. I don't know. He's changing the team up. You know what I mean? Like, later in the career, I don't know if that's really good for a guy to change everything up. Maybe he'll prove me wrong. But like Marco said, I like where Neil Magny's at. He is the more active fighter. He looks much better getting off the bus than Johnny Hendricks does. And maybe Johnny has fixed his love for food. I doubt it highly. But, yeah, unfortunately, as Marco said, I think that Magny is going to be able to keep Johnny Hendricks off of him. I mean, he's got the reach advantage in the arms and in the legs. So I think that he's going to be able to keep him off and keep Johnny Hendricks at distance. I think the Wonder Man gave us the blueprint on how to beat Johnny Hendricks. And Neil Magny is very similar in dimensions to the Wonder Man. So I think he's going to use or employ some of the same techniques that he did, that the Wonder Boy did, Stephen Thompson. And I'm going to take Neil Magny. Second round KO.
Wow. All right, guys.
Ooh, I like where your head is.
you know what? I don't think Prados is far off. Initially, I was actually choosing Magny via KO in the second round over Hendricks. But you know what? I think it's just going to be drawn out. I don't think Magny has – actually, I had Magny written down as a sub in the second round. So I lied there, but I just don't think it's, I agree with Marco. I think it's going to go all three rounds, guys. So I'm going to go Magny over Hendricks. And I don't know how much Hendricks has left, guys, to be frank, in the tank. And so I'm going to go Magny in a decision, over Hendricks. I love how you guys just stay quiet there. All right, guys.
That is called the mute button.
Thank you. All right, guys, we go to the bantamweight. We go, or as of course our guy. By the way, I'm already missing Junkie. Are you guys already missing Junkie?
Absolutely.
Diana Junkie, what is my fix, man? What is my fix, man?
Maybe that was a little.
All right,
too much,
guys.
But that's all right.
At least I didn't say I sucked your dick. So there you go.
Ooh.
Excuse me, bitch.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, Lord. All right, guys. We go. There goes our rating. We go to the bantamweight. We go, guys. The one and only. You know what? Where's the tail of the tape? You know, Prados, I don't know if you're getting into this, too. The more drops we have and the more. We have a crap load of drops right now. I mean, it's just amazing. Anyway. Let's go. we go to the bantamweight. We go TJ Dillashaw, 30 years old. You know, I'm surprised he's 30, guys. 13-3. Dillashaw has three losses, only three losses. And no shame in this game again. Losses to Cruz, Asensio, and Dotson. You know what? I always forget Dotson. I think he KO'd him, right, in the top finale in 2011. Going up against probably the hardest hitter, guys, in the Batman weight we go. John, Hands of Stone Lineker, 26 years old, and he looks 30, and Dillashaw looks 26. 29-7, guys. Lineker, only real losses have been failure to make weight, just like Johnny Hendricks. Hold on. They might have something in common there, guys. The buff, you know what? I don't know if we can go into this because I was going to say the buffet table, but you know what? Yeah, I don't know if we can go into that, guys. Hold on. Yeah, I'm going to talk, right? All right,
excuse
so let's get into
me,
it.
Bitch.
All right, guys, Hands of Stone, again, he has lost seven times, though. That's in various divisions, though, so let's give him that, mainly because he can't make the 125. But he packs a mean punch, guys. Lineker, 9-1 in his last 10, 10-2 since joining the UFC. We go to the man in a frozen tundra, Prados. What do you have?
Yeah, I think this is a very intriguing fight as well. If Lineker can manage to beat the scale and actually make weight, and I really hope that he does. I really hope that he manages to be on weight so this can be a legitimate fight, because he is a serious problem for TJ Dillashaw. I mean, with the power that he's packing, if he tags Dillashaw, you know, once, or, you know, gets a nice combo to the body, to the head, this could be over. I mean, it could be over very, very quickly. Right, Marco? I mean, this guy has superpowers in his hands, hence Hands of Stone. But TJ Dillashaw, under the tutelage of Bang, has been really working on his movement. And if TJ can stay away from him, Lineker, that is, and work his footwork and his feints and his head work, his head movement, and use his shoulder to block and evade a lot of the shots of Lineker, I can see him surviving the early onslaught. And I think, guys, just like Vitor Belfort, John Lineker is very powerful in the beginning and then fades as time goes on. I mean, he's still, again, anybody has a puncher's chance, you land one on the jaw, boom. But I think if TJ can get out of the first round with John, perhaps, we see a decision here. Perhaps we see TJ Dillashaw tag Lineker and get a submission later in the late second, early third. I'm going to go gun to the head. I'm going to go decision from TJ Dillashaw. I think it goes the distance, and TJ gets this done, and hopefully we'll be able to get his rightful title shot. This is a very dangerous fight for TJ Dillashaw. So, I mean, he's really putting it on the line, and we should commend him for taking this fight. Should we not, Marco?
Yes, we do, man. But I'm the same trainer so that you are. I am picking TJ Dillashaw just because he got the better accolades and actually the better record, you know, beating Rafael Asunção, beating Hernan Barão. And I truly believe that Lineker is a smaller version of Hernan Barão. He's a fighter that needs to plant his feet to bring all his power, and he throws all those looping punches, man. Very, very dangerous on the first round. And if he can corral you against the cage, you're in trouble. But I don't think he's going to be able to corral Dillashaw. Dillashaw, alas, Dominic Cruz, he got a very herky-jerky movement and style that actually confuses fighters like you know, like Barão, and in this case, Lineker. He won't be able to find TJ, and TJ is always willing to exchange. If this was a five-round fight, I would say TJ would finish him on the fourth or the fifth, because he beats you by, you know, by demolishing you round by round by round, like he did Barão, like he did Soto. But, you know, since it's a three-rounder, he's going to do like he did Asunção. He's going to just outclass this guy. He's going to outpoint him. He's going to out volume him. It's going to be a 30-27 across the board. I'm just going to be very, very nervous the very first round because, like you said, one punch for Lineker and it changes the whole fight. But I'm picking at TJ Dillashaw on a 30-27 unanimous decision.
Yeah. Darn, guys. You know what? boy, I think a lot of this is going to be similar tonight, guys. I totally agree with Marco. I think I may have stolen his notes. I flew over to Texas and stole those notes because I agree. I mean, I agree with Prados. The first thing is round one, right? If Dillashaw, and obviously he can because he's herky-jerky like Proteus was saying, very much along the lines of Dominick Cruz. And I just think that Lineker, after the first, he does gas out like he did with Dodson. I do, of course, see this going three rounds, and I agree with you guys. Dillashaw via decision if he can survive the first, so I'm going with Dillashaw via decision.
Hey, Tony, quit using the Jedi mind trick and stealing my thoughts, man. Come on, Rogue One.
Sorry, I have to follow the Jedi. I have to follow the Jedi. I don't have a choice. Right, Darth? Hold on, I just ruined that one. Right, Darth?
Oh.
I am your father.
Oh, man. All right. So much for that. All right, guys.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. All right, guys. We go up to, you know, actually my favorite weight, the heavyweight, because someone's going to go. Usually someone goes out, guys. We go up to the heavyweight we go, guys, and a guy that I haven't seen in quite some time. Hey, you know what? How long has it been since we saw this fight? Has it been a year since we saw this fight?
It's been longer than a year, bro.
Has it? All right. Well, we go to Verdum Velasquez 2. Fabricio Verdum, 39 years old. And you know what? He looks all of 39, but I love the guy. 21-6-1, guys, just to give you an idea of Verdum's recent career, guys. He's 12-3 in his last 15. And upon his return to the UFC, guys, 7-1. Talk about a comeback, and we'll get into that. His lone recent loss came to Stipe, where he lost his belt. Going up against Cain Velasquez, 34 years young, 14-2. He actually doesn't look 34. The former UFC heavyweight champion has only two losses in his storied career, guys. Loss, of course, to JDS and all the battles there and Verdum in Mexico City, where he gassed out. And this is a heavyweight with good cardio. We go to the man from Waco. Marco, what you got?
Brown Pride. That is what it says on his chest. Yeah, but look, this is, you know, everybody talking about C-level Cain. Well, this is Nevada altitude Cain, and in Nevada, Cain always looked good. What he did to Travis Brown on his last fight was near perfect. I mean, he's wheel kicking people now. Come on, man. he's a healthy Cain Velasquez. A lot of people, you know, were wondering what happened in Mexico. You know, he didn't take the altitude, you know, into consideration. He got a bad cam, a bad game plan. And let's give credit where credit is due. Verdun owned him on that fight. Yep. But this is a completely different scenario. And I see a Cain Velasquez that is a little bit motivated, a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. And actually, you know, we're going to test the theory of C-level Cain. I am on the bandwagon that C-level Cain is a completely different fighter. And he's actually going to run through Verdun. Now, Verdun, his fight against Stipe, he was clowning around and got caught and lost his belt. And then in the fight with Travis Brown, man, a fight that he dominated the first round, I mean, clearly was winning that fight on the first round. And the second and the third round, he just coasted. I mean, he still looked all right, but he did not finish a dude that got a broken finger and he was actually, you know, owning on the first round. And that gave me, like, a lot of pause. It's like, okay, what is the mental space on this guy? He's 39. You know, he lost his gig with the USC on the Spanish channel. He got a little bit of his grievances here and there. And he's getting a little bit long in the tooth. And I think that for those reasons, because I truly believe that C-level Cain Velasquez is better than Mexico Cain Velasquez, I'm going to give this to Cain Velasquez. I'm going to give it to him on the first round by brutal ground and pound TKO. Cain Velasquez all the way, bro.
Wow.
Brown Pride. I know. It doesn't sound as good when I say it, right? No, I think...
Yeah, I thought... As long as you don't go with a white, you good, man. You good.
I think what a lot of what Marco says makes sense. One thing that does concern me is that Cain Velasquez has already told us that he has a surgery booked for right after this fight. That concerns me just a little bit because that's never really a good thing, right? I mean, that means that he's fighting with something that is clearly ailing him that requires surgery that may affect his performance. Now, do I believe in C-level Cain? Yes, I do. I do believe in C-level Cain. I do believe that he made a mistake the last time in Mexico City and that altitude Cain came out and started huffing puffing because he was only out there for 2 weeks. And Fabricio was out there for 40 days. That makes a huge difference. Now, I'm not taking anything away from Fabricio. We talked about this already when this fight happened. He won fair and square. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, and he has, and he looked good. And yes, he got caught against you Stipe Music. but what are you going to do? You know, sometimes you get caught, you know what I mean? And against Travis Brown, I believe, Marco, he got poked in the eye a number of times against Travis Brown, which is continues to be a problem with how Travis Brown fights with his fingers out. I mean, but Edmund probably is teaching him how to do that, no problems down there. let's get back to the fight, though. Cain Velasquez, I believe, is probably going to take this, barring some kind of colossal failure that due to whatever he is getting operated on. I believe he wins this. I believe that he's going to outwork Fabricio. If it goes to the ground, I can see Fabricio definitely submitting Cain, but I don't think it's going to happen. Cain's ground and pound is strong. He did lose his training partner in Daniel Cormier due to that injury that happened in 206. So that may have had something to do with it. I believe also, both of his training partners were out due to injury. So, I mean, that's going to be interesting to see. But I'm still going to take him because I think that C-level Cain is a thing. And I'm probably going to take C-level Cain by late second TKO Brown Pride.
Wow. All right. By the way, Proteus, Edmund just gave you guys a call.
Fetch.
Oh, man. All right, guys. We go to, you know what? I'm actually going to go Velasquez too. I'm going to go Velasquez. Believe it or not, guys, I'm taking Velasquez via decision. Not joking. Nothing?
All right. Oh, all right.
I can see that. Nothing happened.
There's a number of possibilities here. Seriously.
Yeah, I just don't see him finishing Verdum, and I don't see Verdum being able to finish, like you said, C-level Cain. I just don't see that happening. All right, guys, let's move up to boy, there we go. I have to keep looking at these things. All right, guys, let's go up to the bantamweight we go, guys. This is the one that I've been pondering the most. Of Proteus and Marco, this one is the one that when I was there at UFC on Fox 22, I found that to be pretty interesting, guys, how they wouldn't put them together. But let's go to the bantamweight. We go Dominic Cruz, the champion, versus Cody Garbrandt. So Dominic Cruz, the dominator, of course, guys, 31 years young, 22-1, his lone loss to the California kid, Uriah Faber, early in his WEC career. The decisionator knows how to avoid getting hit, and he's a technical machine. I mean, Dominic Cruz may be one of the best fighters I've ever seen in terms of not getting hit or defensive fighters. Cody No Love Garbrandt, guys, 25 years young. This guy's a stud, 10-0, guys. No Love is undefeated. All of his wins, except for one, via KO or TKO, and he's been the only one. He's only gone to the third round twice, guys. We go to Proteus, we go. Prados, what do you have?
Yeah, like you said, this is a one fight on the card that's really a thinker. You know what I mean? Like this, anything can happen here. Cody No Love, with his beautiful neck tattoo could come out and knock Dominic, the Dominator or the Decisionator, his head right off, you know what I mean, early in the first. And I think it's going to be a similar thing to the Dillashaw-Lineker fight, because they're both fighting similar guys, you know, in that they have a lot of power in their hands. One thing that did concern me is that we saw on the weekend from the SAC, when you said that they wouldn't put them together, and I think that was probably a smart choice for them not to be put together, but I saw that Dominic Cruz was doing pretty much the same thing that he did to TJ Dillashaw before they fought, and he was really invoking a response, and it didn't seem like it was a very positive response from Cody Garbrandt. He just seemed to be getting angry. I saw TJ Dillashaw doing that before they fought the first time. I say the first time because I believe they're going to fight again. So that's what concerns me. I think that Cody Garbrandt is probably going to come out and be over-aggressive. And as you said, Tony, the Dominator is really, really good with his foot movement. Like we were saying with TJ Dillashaw. Tilly. Ooh, whoops. I'm going to take the Dominic Cruz by decision, the Decisionator, in five. I think that if Dominic can take Cody past three rounds, that's not going to be good for Cody. Like you said, he's never had any five-round fights. Is Cody a scary dude? Yes, yes, he is. And I when he was on Junkie Radio, I called in and said that to that. Said something to that effect that, dude, I wouldn't want to mess with him. I wouldn't want to be locked in the cage with him. So the best thing that he can do, Dominic Cruz, I'm saying, is to get into Cody Garbrandt's mind. And I think he's living there almost rent-free at this point.
My boy, Claudius, man, I love the way you're thinking. Well, actually, he's not living on his head rent-free, because he already bought a house with all the money he made out of Cody Garbrandt's partner. So,
that's right.
He's gonna add a spa room with this payment. But yeah, I mean, I equate Dominic Cruz to the Floyd Mayweather of MMA. He barely get touched. He will decision you, but unlike Mayweather, his fights are actually fun. So,
true that.
Yeah, but the fight starts when you sign the bar agreement. And Dominic Cruz knows that. That is why he's poking on Cody Garbrandt to try to put that on this kid's mind. And I think for Cody Garbrandt, this is too much too soon, dude. He only got 10 fights in the UFC, and we really don't know too much about the kid. We know he has power, and that's about it. I mean, according to everybody, he's a good wrestler, but he keeps knocking people out on the first round, and good for him. But we don't know nothing else about him. He hasn't fought really any elite competition, you know. I think the best name he got on his mantle is Takeya Mizugaki, and Takeya Mizugaki is on his way out.
And PVZ.
I got too many doubts on this kid. It's too much too soon. Dominic Cruz, the only person that he had lost to is Uriah Faber. Like you said, that was at the very beginning of his career. He has beaten freaking Demetrius Johnson. He's beat Uriah Faber twice. He beat Joseph Benavidez. He beat the who is who of the lighterweight divisions, man. And I truly believe Dominic is just too smart. He's going to outclass this kid. He's going to move around all over the place, and Cody Garbrandt is not going to be able to find him. It's going to be like a much better version of Alan Juvan versus Mike Perry, because it was going to be all movement, and guy was going to get tagged, and he's going to get frustrated. He's going to try to find Cruz, and Cruz is not going to be there. He's going to get tagged again, and then you're going to see that famous knee that Cruz had. He's going to take him round at the end of each round, and it's going to be a clean 50-45 for Dominic Cruz, and still the UFC bantamweight champion.
Wow. Yeah,
but you can still see it going the other way, though, right, guys? You can still see it. Cody Garbrandt just KO him in the first, right? You can see it going that way.
Well, you haven't let me go. Yeah.
he got the launching power, but picking
Why don't you go ahead and give your pick?
So both of you guys took a decision, right? Dominic Cruz over Garbrandt?
Correct.
All right. Here's where I go rogue.
Rogue one?
Here's where I go rogue, guys. I'm going Garbrandt via KO, and I think he's going to KO him in the first or the second. I'll just pick second for the sake of the show, but I do think he's going to catch him.
Gun to the head.
Nine times. Yeah.
Gun to the head. First or second? Gun to the head.
First
gun
round.
Gun to the head, first or second? Okay.
First round.
I thought that's where you wanted to go. I thought that's where you wanted to go, so that's why I put the gun to your head. I think you're right on that one. That's a possibility. Sorry, Tony.
No, you're right on the money. I mean, it's what I think. Nine times out of ten, I think I do think Dominic Cruz beats Garbrandt, but we've heard this before, guys, right? We've heard this before that Garbrandt had this power. We've heard this before about Garbrandt allegedly, right, knocking out Dillashaw in practice.
There's a little snake in the grass right there.
Guys? So I just think for whatever reason, Dominic Cruz hasn't faced anyone with this kind of power. I do think Garbrandt is literally a hit 'em, quit 'em type of guy. We don't know, like Marco said, we don't know what he is, but I do know this, that if he catches Dominic Cruz, I think he wins. I think Dominic Cruz beats him in a rematch, but I'm gun to the head. I'm picking Garbrandt first round KO over Cruz.
Nice. Like it.
That is bold. That is very bold. Yeah, that's very bold. I love it.
All right, guys. Go up to the, hold on. Did Rhonda just call us? Guys, I think Rhonda just called us. I think she had something technically to say about Misha Tate. Rhonda, what say you about Misha Tate?
Bitch.
Oh, hell no. Misha Tate's beautiful. All right, guys, we go to the main event. We go Honda Housie versus, is she fighting anyone, guys? Because the commercial sure don't show it. We go to the women's bantamweight. We go for the world championship. Amanda Nunes, the champ, a plus 140, guys, versus Honda Housie, a minus 160, guys. Let's go into Amanda Linus Nunes, 28 years young, 13-4. Nunes has four straight victories, guys, over the beautiful Misha Tate, Valentina Shevchenko, Sarah McMahon, and Shayna Baszler. Hold on, everyone beat Shayna Baszler, right, guys? But but did lose. Brutal defeat in the hands of Kat Zingano, guys. We do know she gasses out usually after the first round and leaves her chin open always, guys. But can she go up against Ronda Rousey? 29 years young, guys, 12-2. Not much can be said about the superstar, guys. The legendary Rousey, her lone loss, brutal KO kick by Holly Holm. Housie hasn't fought in over a year. I just said Housie, right, Marco? We go to the man down south. Marco, what you got?
You know all about Ronda, bro. I'm on the Ronda fan club. I'm the president and the founder. But again, let's be a little bit authentic. A lot of people forget who the fuck Ronda Rousey is, man. And before she lost to freaking Holly Holm, she wasn't just beating girls. She was obliterating girls. Freaking Beth Correa knockout in 30 seconds. She made her freaking face plant in the, you know, straight out of content freaking sign. Kat Zingano, 14 seconds. Alexis Davis, 16 seconds. Sarah McMahon, a minute and a half. Misha Tate, she went three rounds on the second, in his second fight with her. She's still topper. Liz Carmouche, 4 minutes of the first round. Sarah Kaufman, 30 seconds. Misha Tate, the first time, one round. So people are forgetting who the fuck Ronda Rousey is. Now, Betch Correa. This is where my mind is.
Betch.
Speaking of Betch, Amanda Nunes, she's a very dangerous girl, man. She got legit knockout power. I mean, she reconfigured Misha Tate's face with that freaking punch to the nose.
Ouch.
Scare in the first round. But like everybody knows, man, I mean, a cat in canoe poses girl big time. If you get her on the water, this girl cannot swim. She sinks. And this is a five-round fight. Now, we have seen that Don Ronda, when he got her head straight, she can actually go, you know, quote-unquote, the distance. She did it with Misha Tate. And she outclassed Misha. You know, that wasn't even a fight. I'm going with my conger Ronda. I think she got her head back straight. A lot of people are like, oh, she's not doing interviews. Oh, why is she doing this? Oh, why is she doing that? I guess she's just thinking about this fight. And she's so focused on this fight, she doesn't give two fucks about doing interviews or promoting this fight. She just wants to go up there and correct her wrong. I'm gonna give Amanda Nunes the respect of, you know, the first round is very dangerous. And I'm going to be concerned the whole first round. After that first round, I think Ronda's going to take over. And he's going to drag this girl to the ground and take his arm home. Once in a concern, and I still understand why she's still freaking training with this guy Targaryen. Why, Ronda? Why? This that dude. This that Armenian son of the gun. But I still picking Ronda because people are forgetting that Ronda Rousey is legit.
Championship.
Marco,
second round armbar.
Yeah, you said something about a bag of dicks earlier on, so I'm going to give that right back to you again. We're just joking, fellas. We're just joking, everybody. It's just friendly banter. How do we know what Rhonda's doing, Marco? Like, she's not talking to anybody that's important. What is she, Rocky? Is she Rocky IV? Is she out in the wilderness? This is what we're hearing. This is the kind of storytelling that these people, the Empire, cue the music, is trying to force upon us. They're trying to get us the dark side of things. They haven't shown us Amanda Nunes, right? I mean, all the promotion that we've seen is Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey, she's back. I don't buy it, man. I don't buy it. I think that Ronda is not there. I don't think that she's got her head straight. There's nothing and no one that has shown me anything different. I mean, we've been very concerned for her, Marco, right? We've been very concerned for her mental for a while now, and she's not doing anything to make me feel...
You are the leader of the level Arayas and a traitor.
Is that Dana? Sorry, Lord Dana.
No, that's
I apologize, dark. Lord Dana. I apologize, Lord Dana. Yeah, listen, guys, I'm very concerned because not only is Ronda Rousey, her talent agency is running the UFC right now. You know what I mean? And they've been spending a lot of money on her. This is very, I don't even know if this is less or more stress for Ronda Rousey right now than it was when she was doing the media rounds everywhere.
Damn,
because she's got everybody, not only her bosses are her bosses and they are her talent agency. So there's a lot of pressure right now on Ronda Rousey, even more than she had beforehand when she was facing the preacher's daughter, who Tony has a little bit of a problem with. And by the way, guys, why was Holly Holm in Sacramento? That's another question I have for you. Anyways, let's move on. I think that, yeah, there it is. Absolutely, careless whisper. I think that Amanda Nunes can win this fight, guys. I really do. And I think she can walk off KO Ronda. I think her chin is not what it used to be, obviously, because she got brutally head kicked in the head. More than a year ago in Australia. Dudes, we haven't heard anything from her except that she wanted to kill herself and she wanted to have Travis Brown's babies. I'm very concerned about Ronda Rousey. And no, Marco, I have not forgotten about her dominance in that division. She made that division. And they've opened up another division for her to do a Conor McGregor if that happens. But you know what? Holly Holm's going to do that first before Ronda Rousey is going to have a chance to do it. So that's going to belittle that a little bit. So I'm going to take Nunes, and you're right. You're right to be concerned about her gas tank. It's nothing that we haven't seen before, that she gets exhausted. And yes, The judo game of Ronda Rousey is definitely for real, guys. Let's not forget what she had done. Marco ran through her accomplishments just a minute ago. I think that Nunes is going to be able to connect. I think that she's going to be able to knock her out because, you know what, I think Rousey is going to come out too charged up like she did with Holly Holm, and she's going to get another KO, and that'll be it for her because, you know what, Marco, as we said on this show before, she doesn't need it anymore. She's making enough money doing other things, and her getting knocked out again is going to be a little bit detrimental to her career because we saw that that was the case when she got knocked out by Holly Holm. So I'm going to take Nunes, or Nunes, however you want to pronounce it, first round KO.
Okay, you're going to give me this. Give me one. What we can see on her physically, she looks mean, dude. She looks in top shape, dude. Whatever skill we got when she. Oh, dude, you got to see her training footage right now. Physically, I'm talking about body wise. Yeah, she looks ripped. And I mean, rip. I think her 45% is below 8% right now. She looks mean.
I'm not impressed by her performance.
Nothing else?
Go ahead, Marco. She looks mean. She looks mean. Go ahead.
No, like, remember a lot of people criticized her because she looked a little soft on the Holly Holm fight? A lot of people notice that she look a little bit pudgy on the weigh-ins and stuff. Not now. She does not look pudgy at all, dude. And probably where her mental state is training was. I'm saying training was, I guess she's taking this fight seriously. That doesn't mean that she's gonna win or she's not gonna win. I pick her to win. You got your reasons not to pick her to win, but I think just for the look of her physique right now, I think she's taking this fight very, very seriously. Unlike the Holly Holm fight that I think she took a little bit for granted and then all the other pressures and distractions she got, you know, dig her in and she got knocked the fuck out. But as it is right now, and I still go with my hunger, dude, because I think it is better for the sport anyway. Tony, what you got?
Thank you, dummies.
All right, guys.
Oh, you were finished. Well, allow me to retort.
Guys, I got to agree with Marco on this one. In all fairness, I mean, first off, well, we refuse to talk about what happened to the Miesha Tate fight. I refuse to talk about that, guys. Thank you. All right, guys. But in all sincerity, let's look at who Amanda Nunes is. Amanda Nunes was a huge underdog, or a pretty good sized underdog, versus Miesha Tate. No one thought Nunes was going to win. So to all of a sudden point Nunes, I mean, let's not forget, she barely beat Valentina Shevchenko, barely. She had Valentina in the first round. Shevchenko won, in my opinion, not obviously what matters, but in my opinion, she basically won the third round, second one, toss up. She did beat McMahon via decision. And that was in the first round, but beating Shayna Baszler, that's not a big task, guys. And she was dominated by Kat Zingano. So let's keep in mind, she also lost to Alexis Davis. So I don't think that Ronda is going to be the Ronda that she was when she thought she was boxing. I agree with Marco. I think she's taking training back seriously. I wouldn't be surprised, guys. The rumors are that she's being trained by someone else in Glendale. So I wouldn't be surprised if she literally is doing something, guys. But I just don't think that if Ronda's head, and that's a big if, right? But if Ronda's head is still where it should be, I think she's going to win the belt again, guys. And like Marco said, it's good for the sport. The UFC needs it. We can't make Nunes to be something that she is in pro, because before she beat Miesha, she was underdog. She was an underdog. So I'm gonna pick.
Well, actually,
I'm gonna pick Rousey second round submission armbar.
Yeah. Hey, Ronda did her coming, Big Bear this time. She was in Glendale, so
just watch out for Big Bear.
Yeah, well, you know, all the cardio freaks go to Big Bear. Just take time for that as well.
Hey, listen, Marco.
What's up, bro?
What's up, bro?
The beauty to your beast is against you. She's saying Team Nunes all the way. And she says, watch out. Watch out for her Brazilian shirt when she's there at 209. Keep your eyes peeled.
I see you, Bob. I see you. I see you, Pam.
Oh, sorry.
A member of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor.
Yeah, but in all fairness, Pam is picking Nunes because she met her and she likes her. I don't know if she's picking her necessarily because
you might be picking a fight right now, Tony, because she's listening live. You might be picking a fight, so.
Oh, that I'm just keeping it real. No, we chatted about this. Yeah, I mean, I even said, like Kel said, you know, if you look at the poster, they make poor Amanda Nunes look like Shrek.
Who the fuck is that guy?
And Honda Halsey looked like a movie star, but let's be honest. I mean, he's not fighting
fetch
here. I mean, she's fighting a legit fighter. So is Nunes a good fighter? Absolutely. Is she a championship fighter right now? I think I said this when she won, guys. I think I can pick three or four bantamweights right now that I think that could beat Nunes. Not that they will. I'm just saying that they could. And if you can do that, if you can do that, then you have a chance. If you guys can pick three to four fighters right now that can beat Honda Halsey on her best day. And again, we don't know which Ronda we're getting.
That's exactly
right. But
it, Tony.
You guys can't pick three or four fighters right now that can beat Honda on her best day.
What's her best day anymore? That's the problem. You know what I mean? Like, anyways, we've said it. Let's just move on.
All right, guys. Let's All right, guys. let's get into it, guys. Obviously we're in the most wonderful time of the year right now, guys, but it's time to reminisce, guys, and talk a little bit about what's happened this year. So let's get into it, guys. We're gonna go into the best in MMA, the year's best, guys. Let's get into it. We're going to go the year that was in MMA, and we're going to start with Marco with the fight of the year. Marco, what was your fight of the year?
Okay, man, there is so many to choose from this year, man. You got, of course, just a couple, like last week, you know, the Duho Choi, Cub Swanson, and then you got, what is it that... Man, I forgot that Maestro Don John King fought some other dude. That was a fantastic fight. But I'm going to go with a title fight, you know, that actually made something. I mean, kudos to McGregor Diaz, too. That was an awesome fight, too. But my fight of the year was Condit versus Lawler. That fight got championship on the line. These guys took part of their soul, you know, hitting his shoulder, punishing his shoulder, and a very close decision for Lawler. I've seen that affected him on his next fight with Tyron Woodley, and I also seen that affected Callum Condit on his next fight with Demian Maia. That is the fight of the year for me. It was so much fun, so much emotion, and it was a good way to get the year started, you know, because it was the first fight of the year on the current calendar year, so I hope this close in the year we get something similar.
Yeah, no, I agree with Marco. I don't think that there's any way that you cannot promote that fight to the fight of the year. Again, like Marco said, with the championship implications, it went five rounds. Like Marco said, they both gave up something in the fight, and they're never going to be the same again. Lawler versus Condit is. As great as the fight was at 206 with the Korean Superboy and our boy, refresh my memory, guys. I'm sorry, I'm dry on a blank. I don't know why.
Killer Cub, man. Please. Killer Cub.
Yeah.
Killer Cub Swanson.
Cubby Sampson. How did I forget Cubby Sampson? I mean, what's going on with me? My head is not here. I was doing something. Yeah, I apologize. Duho Choi versus Cubby Sampson was fantastic, but it was only three rounds. Could you imagine if that was a five-round fight? Cub probably would have knocked him out in the fourth or the fifth round, and we would have, you know, not had a problem with having that fight being the fight of the year. But I have to go with Lawler Condit. And again, what an amazing thing that the first fight the first championship fight of the year ends up being the fight of the year for two of the three hosts in this show. I don't know what Tony's going to pick, but that's amazing.
Guys, I'm going to pick fight of the year. I'm going with, I'm going to surprise you guys here because you guys are going to think I'm crazy on this, but I'm going to go with Miesha Tate beating Holly Holm, guys. And this is no bias whatsoever. This has nothing to do with me steering anyway.
Good fight, though.
No. Let's be honest. All right.
You know what?
Go ahead, Mark.
Go ahead, man. Go ahead. Go ahead, man. This is your pick, so go ahead.
In all sincerity, I'm picking Lawler versus Condit. I mean, for me, that
a good fight, though. That was a great fight.
Yeah, I just think Condit versus Lawler, that one meant something. I think that was a really close fight. I think both guys left their careers, and I'm not joking when I say this, guys. I think both guys left their careers in that octagon, and for that day, they literally fought probably for their lives. Even the fifth round, when you really see that, because let's be honest, I mean, I can talk about Miesha Tate all I want, guys, and you know I will, but let's face it, she was losing that fight until the very last minute. I'm happy for her that she got to live her career goal and all this, because you know she is a fantastic fighter, guys. And oops, sorry, never mind. All right, guys, but in all sincerity, Condit versus Lawler, guys, that's probably the without a doubt the fight of the year. And Marco and I were talking about this, and you can look at Cub Swanson, you can look at all the others, but that fight meant something, and both of those guys left their careers there.
Hey, listen,
yeah, I don't disagree with you that as a candidate for fight of the year of an honorable mention, that is a pretty good fight, man. I mean, completely escaping for a minute, but you're right.
Yeah.
That was a very entertaining fight, and a championship changed hands on that. So, yeah, it got a lot of drama and a come-from-behind win. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not mad at the decision. I still think Condit Lawler beat it, though, but, you know, not mad for you. You renege on it, but it's okay.
No, I agree too, Tony. Tony, I don't think that's a joke of a fight either. I mean, it meant something too. I mean, Tate won the belt, right? And it was a 5-round fight, and she ended up choking her out. You know, no tap, no. It was a full out. She went to sleep. So that fight there is like Marco said, that's a sleeper right there. I totally had glossed over it too, but good fight. I'm still going with Lawler Condit as well.
Yeah, I totally agree, you guys. I mean, honestly, that's the happiest I was is seeing Miesha win, but then that's as a fan, right? But as a fight that really meant something, that was literally mano a mano, that was Condit Lawler. Guys, let's go to one of the biggest things that we're going to hear. And I think it's a given. But then again, we were able to get a clip from Conor McGregor here when we asked, Conor, who is the fighter of the year?
I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody.
Thank you. All right, guys. Well, fighter of the year, we go to the frozen tundra. Prados,
yes.
What do you have?
Yeah, there are a lot of contenders for this that you have to consider. And Conor McGregor is definitely one of those fighters that you have to consider. I mean, he did make history, right? So that's something that we have to consider here. Now, but when I was considering it, I was taking into consideration not only Dominic Cruz, but also Michael Bisping, because both of those fighters have had a spectacular year, as well as Conor. You know, coming back from a serious, serious injury. I mean, I know that wasn't this year, but doing what he did this year, Dominic Cruz, you know, winning the title back, beating TJ Dillashaw. Yes, he hasn't fought again since, but I don't know. It was very, very hard for me to decide. And I know Conor got a loss this year, but I don't know if that's more of a wash for me because he did what he did at the end of the year. The one thing that stood out in my mind when I kept thinking about this is because I've been a fan of this sport for so long that I realize everything that Michael Bisping has actually put into his career. And I never, ever thought, if you would have asked me at the beginning of the year, would Michael Bisping be the middleweight champion of the world and to have already defended it by the end of the year, I would have told you to go stick that right up your bum. I'm going to be honest with you. Right? And 100%. No one, absolutely nobody thought that Michael Bisping would ever win that title. Ever. And you know what he did? He won that title. He knocked out Luke Rockhold fair and square. So, and he defended this title. And guys, I know you're going to say it's against the 40-year-old Dan Henderson that shouldn't have gotten the title shot because he was number 13 in the world. But you know what? The UFC set that fight up, not Michael Bisping. We know the fact. I think that Michael Bisping is my fighter of the year, begrudgingly, because I don't really like him as a person. I really don't. I don't know him, but his exterior and what he shows to us is not, you know, really acceptable to me. But I think his accomplishments and what he has done get him the fighter of the year. If Dominic Cruz does not win, if Dominic Cruz wins at UFC 207, I have to give it to Dominic Cruz. Sorry, guys.
Okay. it's a good argument. But see, I get on my head there was three candidates, man. The first one was Stipe Miocic, you know, because in 1 year he beat Andre Arlovski, former Ooh. Champion, got the title against Verdun, and then he beat former Strikeforce champion Alistair Overeem, and all of them on first-round knockouts, mind you. You know, then you got Michael Bisping, you know, he beat Anderson Silva. A lot of people saw he probably could have lost the fight in the third round. You know, he got knocked out, but he didn't. The knockout of his life against Rockhold. And then he beat a 400-year-old Henderson that almost beat him too. You know, he touched him up pretty good, knocking him down three times. So
let's be honest. I did say that I thought Henderson won that fight, just to be honest.
Yeah. It's a very good feel-good story. But for me, it has to go to Conor McGregor. It's not just because of the arguments of what he did on the cage, you know, winning two belts at the same time of his last fight, but how he affected the sport in this 1 year alone. Not only by breaking all the pay-per-view records, not only that his absence alone made UFC 200 a very forgettable card, but he goes into Madison Square Garden and he breaks the gay record for $18 million freaking dollars. Tyson didn't do it. Ali didn't do it. Guns N' Roses didn't do it. I mean, you know, the who is who that have performed Madison Square Garden, and they take this Irish dude to break the record of Madison Square Garden. And along that, the guy gets two belts and break another pay-per-view record. How the guy affected the sport as a whole this year gave me the nudge for me to make him the fighter of the year. He has shown all the other fighters the roadmap to actually pursue leverage. And you see it unfolding. Ever since this guy started opening his mouth, people, whether they like it or not, are taking notice. And other fighters are opening their mouths too. I have never seen more fighters opening their mouth and talking their grievances more than this
Agreed.
Year alone. And it's because this guy, Conor McGregor, started doing it. That is why he's my fighter of the year, you know. But let's honorable mention Stipe Miocic and, of course, Michael Bisping.
Good breakdown, Marco. I appreciate that.
Unfortunately, I agree with Marco.
Sorry, I'm late. I just don't give a fuck.
There's no way you can't give it to McGregor. McGregor, for the last couple of years, guys, has changed the landscape of the MMA, as Marco says. Everyone's trying to be like him. Everyone's trying to call out, is he the best fighter? No, absolutely not. He's not the best fighter. I mean, even you know, Nate Diaz will tell you that, right?
Steroids? We ain't talking about steroids.
But let's be honest with, he's changing the way people are getting paid. This hasn't happened in quite some time. And there's just no way that, you know, he's actually able to say things to Dana that other people aren't able to say.
Thank you, dummies.
But let's be honest. I mean, McGregor is changing the landscape of MMA. I can guarantee you this right now, guys. And this will go into a category we have later. But if Conor McGregor was to start a guild or an alliance or a union, which is absurd that anyone says union, but if he was to start it, then something would happen. But instead you had someone, you know, that's not of his caliber trying to start it. And where has it gone? Nowhere. Right, guys. So my fighter of the year, without a doubt, Conor McGregor.
Fair enough.
All right, guys, let's go into the KO of the year. And this is one of those things that I always feel bad about because it means something happened, right? I mean, I even called Rhonda and I asked her.
Fetch.
Thank you, Rhonda. All right, but so let's go into it, guys. The knockout of the year.
You got knocked the fuck out, man.
All right, let's go. Whose turn is it? Is it Proteus or is it
Marco? My turn.
Marco, the star, knockout of the year.
Hey. Well, it happened very recently, and it makes SportsCenter's top 10, and it was very reminiscent of Edson Barboza Terrierin. I'm talking about Lando Banada pulling his inner Edson Barboza against McDessie just, you know, a couple of weeks ago. And it is by far the best knockout I've seen in a long time. The guy throws a straight low kick, you know, that is very famous out there on the guys in Albuquerque. And then force McDessie to like cover and then spins immediately and knock this guy out cold. So he got it like just by the tip of the just what this is so fresh on my mind. I cannot freaking forget it. It was so cool. He made a Sports Center and then they repeated the knockout on the Fox Sports prelims just because it was a short fight and because the knockout was so awesome. So Lando Manara, I guess, for me.
I agree. Lando gets it for me as well. He gets the nod from me. It was very reminiscent of Barboza versus Edom. I still believe that Barboza takes that win for most violent. I mean, it was very smooth by Lando and very calculated. But it wasn't the first that had happened, and I think that Barboza still wins that for that viciousness of the KO and how the opponent just reacted to the fact that he was getting KO'd. But yes, Marco, you are correct. I'm going to take Lando KO.
Calrissian.
Indeed.
Lando Calrissian, Bennett.
Do we have any of the Rebel Alliance music? Probably not.
We do. But it's so let's he's right about that. It's but this is not this. No, we don't have the Rebel Alliance. We only have the Empire. Never mind. I messed that one up. Sorry, guys. Messed that one up. That's the wrong one. Right, Dana? Hold on. Dana just called.
Thank you, dummies.
All right, guys. I think you're missing one that's very important, guys. And that's it happened early. So When I first thought about the knockout of the year, I thought Michael Venom Page, of course, with the knee to Cyborg, but that was not a knockout, right? Because
that was a TKO.
So it wasn't a knockout.
Vicious.
So
it's still vicious.
It's still vicious. But when I was actually, I was asking a buddy of mine, and he actually gave me this one, and he's right. The knockout of the year, the most brutal one that I've ever seen of recent. So let's just say, the most brutal one I've seen in 2016 was January 29th. So you guys might have forgotten that. And that's one thing that no one can ever tell us that we're just UFC Central, because we're not. We talk about MMA, period, especially on Sundays on This Week in MMA. But Patricky Pitbull knocking out Ryan Couture. That I honestly thought the way he folded and went down, that was perhaps the most brutal KO I've ever seen. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good mention, dude. It's a very good mention that the way McDessie just folded like a tree, timber. Yeah, a little bit more.
And the way that it was delivered, it was just delivered so calmly and coolly, just whap, and it was over. I appreciate Tony bringing in some Bellator love.
Yeah, let's not forget about Bellator. MVP, is that going to be a clean KO? Is that going to be a clean KO, you know, for the
freaking
MVP?
That would have been crazy.
Yeah, like Ryan Bader against Queen Latifah, that was another vicious KO, that knee. Because,
that was,
you know,
indeed,
Latifah looked like he got shot by a freaking shotgun, but it wasn't such a smooth freaking knee. It looked like he was throwing a leg, he was throwing a kick, and then Latifah just ran into the knee. And this one, Banada, he meant to do it, and he did the technique, and he did it. That is what it looked so cool, and it was so immediate, and he walked off. He was a walk-off KO after
McDessie landed.
Yeah. When McDessie fell off, just Banada turned around, and it's done. It's over. Finished.
All right, guys. Let's go into let's go into the submission of the year, because this one actually is pretty easy for me, guys. But we're going to go to Prados. Prados, submission
of
the year.
If it's easier for you, you go first, because I don't got one. I don't have a clear-cut one, so you go.
Well, no one can ever say this about me, guys. No one can ever say that I'm one-sided. No one can ever say that I only pick the women here, because that's not true. That is not true. But my submission of the year, guys, is going to be, believe it or not, Mackenzie Dern's. I don't know what that was, because that was like two submissions in one. But I'm going to give it to Mackenzie Dern, guys. What she did to Montana Stewart was just amazing, guys. So I'm going to give it to Mackenzie Dern on that submission, where it was like literally two submissions in one.
Yeah, that's a good pick. Yeah, that was a pretty cool submission, too.
Go ahead, Marco.
So Proteus doesn't have one
of this. No, it's a... My submission of the year is nothing fancy, but it's what it meant. And it's, for me, the best grappler in MMA, Demian Maia, when he choked out Carlos Condit, because I did not see that coming. Nobody choked out Carlos Condit. I mean, Carlos Condit hasn't been finished since forever. And then I saw Demian Maia just, first of all, own him on the grappling, and then choke him out. And I'm like, oh my God, Demian Maia is a mutant. Demian Maia is out of this world. If you go into the mat with Demian Maia, the fight is over. And more than like a submission of the year, is the submission of the year for me, because Demian Maia is a wizard on the ground. And you got to appreciate the intrinsicities of what he does when he gets you there. Once he's on your back, it's curtain. Yeah. It's over. I mean, he did it to Matt Brown. It took him a little longer. But with Carlos Condit, it was so smooth, so effortless. So I was like, dude, please get there. At the time, I was riding the Demian Maia hype train, you know, give him a title shot, because if he gets you to the ground, the fight is over. If he gets anybody who's back, the fight is going to be over. The point is getting you there, but that was my submission of the year for me.
I agree that Demian Maia has had a highlight of submissions this year. And Marco, I think that the Matt Brown submission was more impressive because of how long it actually took. You know, we just discussed earlier on that Carlos may have been a fighter that was fighting, depleted. I thought the Matt Brown finish was, or the submission was, masterful. Matt Brown not only fought off Demian Maia for, you know, X amount of rounds, as opposed to Carlos Condit, who got finished right away. Matt Brown had a Demian Maia backpack for, you know, at least 15 minutes. You know what I mean? I can't remember how long the fight lasted. It's not in front of me right now. But my submission of the year, two and a half rounds, so almost three. My submission of the year is going to go to Francis Ngannou. That was impressive, because we don't really
see
We don't really see heavyweights do that very often. And I remember when I was at the hashtag MMA meetup for hashtag UFC 206, everybody was on their feet yelling, "Oh my God, did you see that heavyweight Francis Ngannou just Kimura that guy?" You know what I mean? And I even got confused when I was talking about it on Sunday, that the Sunday after, that it was, I confused the fights. I think that Francis Ngannou, even though his technique may not have been perfect, but just the fact that he was able to muscle that and use his lats to help that Kimura happen, beautiful. So I'm going to go with Francis Ngannou, because nobody's talking about Francis Ngannou.
I love where your mind is, man. I love where your mind is. I like that.
Well, I'm sure his family's talking about him, right? All right, guys, let's go to stuff that we're going to skip one, because I think it's only fair, but actually it's going to make sense. Let's go into story of the year, guys. What is the story of the year for you, Marco?
Well, the story of the year is actually the sale of the USC. You know, you've been rumored for a long time it was going to happen. It was going to be 20%. It was going to go to the Chinese. When it actually went to WME, we all find out the value of the company, $4.2 billion, and it's nothing to sneeze at. And the way that sale has affected the way the USC is going to be, you know, running now, everybody knows they inquired a lot of debt, and they had to make sort of that debt back, because they got to pay the interest, they got to pay the principal, everything is spreadsheets now. So that is going to affect the way the whole industry freaking is run for the foreseeable future. And, man, it's nothing to sneeze at. $4.2 billion with a D dollars, the biggest sports sales of any franchise ever. Who would have thought that it's not Manchester United, it's not the Lakers or you know, the Yankees that are being sold, or the Dallas Cowboys. It's the UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championship, a company that was bought for $2 million in the year 2000 of the Fertittas, then sold for $4.2 billion. That is like economics 101. Buy low and sell high, and they sold really high. Congratulations to the Fertittas. Congratulations to Lord Dana for making all those millions of dollars. Congratulations to Joe Silva, because Joe Silva also got a good chunk, like I think $20 million out of this sale. So you can't be mad about that. I mean, think about this. In the year 2000, you can have $100,000 in your pocket and you bought 0.5% of the company. That would have been 100,000 was 5% of the company. That is $200 million in your pocket.
Damn.
It's mind-boggling kind of numbers, dude. Mind-boggling kind of numbers. So that is the story of the year for me.
I agree with Marco that is the story of the year, but the other story of the year is the fact that, you know, the fighters are trying to come together and start an association and fight for their rights. And you're laughing at me. I'm not sure why you're laughing.
No, just because that story is gone, come and gone, right? I mean, it's
because you're
a
member of the rebellion and a traitor.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what though? Because we're very, very prone to taking in state-run TV, and we're very prone at taking in state-run media and social media. That, you know what? They're not really doing anything. You know what, guys? These fighters are still going to fight. They're still going to try and unionize. They're still trying to get together, and it's going to happen. And that is going to be probably the story of next year, or maybe 2018.
Yeah.
Who knows?
2018.
But yes, the story of this year is absolutely positively the sale of the UFC for an ungodly amount of money. And the fact that the Empire has not spoken to us yet and doesn't seem to want to speak to us yet, and we don't know what their plans are for not only running the company, but treating the quote-unquote contractors that work for them And I can't remember what it was the other day that somebody was talking about, maybe perhaps it was on the radio or a podcast that I was speaking, listening to, that the talent is what's making you the money. And that's true. The talent is making the UFC the money. The UFC can sit there and say, hey, the UFC is great, the UFC is great, unless they have stars, unless they have people who can sell pay-per-views like Conor McGregor and your girl Honda Housey, which we don't know if she can still sell pay-per-views, by the way, because she's been off for over a year.
Ouch.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So where was I going with that, guys? Store of the year, absolutely. Story of the year is the sales of the UFC, and I think the story of 2017, and I know, Tony, you're probably going to say this next, what's going on in the next year. I'm gonna solve it for you. This is going to be an issue. This is going to be an issue moving forward. Fighters are going to try and unionize or associate or fight for more of their rights. And that'll be probably the story of the next year. But this year, absolutely. Sale of the UFC for an ungodly amount of money and the amount of debt that the Empire took on and how desperate they look to make that money back. I'm done.
What are we talking about?
I got a question. And a little bit of a sidetrack. Now we're talking about the Empire. How much money they spend building the Death Star, man? Because that is a huge amount of debt, man. And then they blew it up and they can build another one?
I mean, the plans are there, you know what I mean? We see the campus being built. I think it's going to be a Death Star, don't you, Marco? I think it's going to be a Death Star. A world destroyer!
No, I was talking about the movies, but it's okay, man.
But by the way, Proteus, Dana just called and wanted to leave you a message.
I am your father.
Uh-oh. Oh, boy. Story of the year. Guys, there's a few things I thought about here because I wanted to be a little different because I knew we were all going to talk about the same thing. So I was thinking, is it Bjorn Rebney's comeback? Is it, you know, the fact that Rory McDonald and one of my favorites, Bendo, signed with Bellator. That was big. Was it the fact that, you know, the beautiful Misha Tate is now a free agent in many ways? Never mind. When that happened, I called Proteus really quick.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Yeah!
And, of course, he shut that down. So it was a Misha Tate, but honestly, the story of the year, guys, without a doubt, is the UFC being sold, guys. I mean, there's no way that anyone can change it. I mean, that is going to change so many things because if Proteus was to tell me that a union is realistic with the Fertittas, I would have said not going to happen. Absolutely. You know, come on, guys, because they would talk to them. They would do what Dana did with Cowboy Cerrone, right? And then it would be over.
Can't do it.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's, you know, with competing agencies, et cetera, I do think it's realistic, but I do think they all need to come together, guys, because the way they're doing it right now, I mean, it's just completely chaotic and it's not going to happen. So, I mean, they need to come together somehow, some way. Oh. All right, guys. So let's get into it. As we're winding down, three more comeback fighter of the year. So let's go, Pro. What you got?
Yeah, this is a tough one, man. I mean, it's hard not to, again, put Michael Bisping on this pedestal here because, again, at the beginning of the year, if you would have told me that Michael Bisping would have been a champion, I would have laughed in your face, turned away, and never gone back to talking to you again because I had written him off. I'm going to be honest with you. And the comeback is amazing. However, again, Dominic Cruz. What a comeback. You know what I mean? You know,
100%.
Like,
yeah.
What are you going to say here? I mean, the guy who's been off for forever because of injuries comes back and wins his title back that he never lost. I mean, yeah, you probably got to put that up on a pedestal because of what he did. But we always thought that he could be a champion. We never thought that Michael Bisping should be a champion. I know I never did. Absolutely not. You know, maybe that's my bias because I didn't like him very much. But I'm trying not to have that bias anymore because I'm trying to be professional. And he really did have a comeback. You know what I mean? I mean, he came out of nowhere, won the freaking title, and defended it. So I think, again,
well, let's be careful on the defending it, right?
He defended it. I mean, there's no, the judges called it for him. He defended it. As much as I disagree with that, the defense or who he fought, he still did do it. All we're going to see in the record books 20 years from now is that Michael Bisping won the title and defended it. No one's going to know who Dan Henderson is. No one's going to give a shit. It's all about who and what happened, right? However, Dominic Cruz, if he is able to beat Garbrandt at 207, again, I think he wins a couple of these awards, and we're just, you know, this is the end of the year show, and we're not doing any more after this event. So if he does end up happening to win, I think you've got to give it to Cruz. Right now, though, at this moment, I have to give it to Michael Bisping.
I agree on the assessment that Prodigy's got on Dominic Cruz. I was thinking about Khabib Nurmagomedov, but the quality of opponents that he faces here, you know, he get a late replacement guy that, you know, really did not belong in there with Khabib. Yeah. And then he beat Michael Johnson, that, you know, as good as Michael Johnson is, he's not a title holder. What did Dominic do this year? He beat TJ Dillashaw, and then he beat Uriah Faber. And yeah, I think it's going to be Cody Garbrandt. So as of right now, my combat fighter of the year is Dominic Cruz. You know, honorable mention for Michael Bisping, but he never really make a comeback because he never went anywhere. He was always there. Michael Bisping never left us. We just forgot that he was this good, and now he's a champion.
Nah, so he wasn't reminded. There, though, Marco. There's no way that he was there. You know what I mean? He wasn't where he is now. We didn't ever consider him to be where he is now. Let's be honest.
And I understand, and I see your logic. I'm not trying to poke holes in it. Like, yeah, the story of Michael Bisping this year is so cool, and I loved it. I love the fact that he's a champion, you know, after all this year of unfulfilled potential. But, you know, if you want to be technical about it, he was always fighting. He was an active fighter, and that nobody saw that he was going to become a champion. And that is the surprising part. So if you want to call that a comeback, yeah, I understand. But for me, the criteria
is a little bit more. Beat the champion? 2 weeks notice.
Yeah. He 11 days. 11 okay. days.
So 11 less than days. 2 weeks
notice. Less than 2 weeks notice, yes. But if you go by what people traditionally think about a comeback, I mean, Dominic Cruz, like you say, he was gone forever. He got a fight in between with Takeda Mizugaki, and then he was gone another freaking year. So that is a true comeback. And then immediately comes back and regains his title back against a fighter that is no joke, like TJ Dillashaw. I mean, TJ Dillashaw is a destroyer of wars. And then beats probably the second best bantamweight and featherweight of all time in Uriah Faber. So, yeah, you know, also ran out Dominic Cruz for me, the combat fighter of the year.
I totally agree with Marco. I mean, what Dominic Cruz did after so many years of not fighting, and let's be honest, he beat, you can say what you want, but a legit champion.
There's a little snake in the grass right there. Hey, little boy.
Without a doubt, it's Dominic Cruz. I mean, what he did, that comeback at UFC Fight Night, Dillashaw versus Cruz. Mind you, it was early, so we forget, January 17th. But I also agree with Marco. I mean, Bisping has fought every year at least twice. As great as that story is, Dominic Cruz being all those injuries, losing effectively 4 years out of his life and just coming back and beating a legit champion, I got to give it to Dominic Cruz, guys. Let's go. As we're losing time, let's go. Comeback. Star of the future. To Proteus. We go. Star of the future.
Yeah, I'm gonna take from this weekend's event and say that and back up my pick and say that Mickey Gall. I'm really interested in what this guy is doing. I know that he's, you know, fought bullshit people the whole three fights that he's been in the octagon. But you know what, man? He's looked impressive every time against, you know, the $80,000 man, your boy, what's his name again? Sorry, I don't even remember his name. Sage Northcutt. Oh, right, that's his name. Why the hell is this guy making so much money, by the way? He just got...
TJ, who's your mama?
Very salty.
Yeah, he just got his bum handed to him by Mickey Gall. Mickey Gall not only caught him on the feet, and let's forget, people seem to be forgetting that the stand-up battle was going on, and Mickey Gall caught Sage Northcutt. He caught him. Sage fell to the ground, and then Mickey Gall took his back and choked him out. Anyways, I think Mickey Gall is going to be a star of the future. I hope that he gets big fights. I hope that he looks impressive. That's my star of the future.
Marco. Oh,
I like it. I like that pick. Look, I got so many candidates. You know, I was thinking about Lando Manara that gave, you know, that great fight and sure knows what Tony Ferguson.
Great choice.
And then, yeah, and then he knocked the hell out of Mike Desi. And thinking about the Hick Diaz, I don't remember the kid's name, but he got a chip on his shoulder. I like his fighting style. damn it, man. There's so many. But I'm going to go a little bit on the heavyweight division because I think they need stars, and I like what this guy is doing. He doesn't speak a bit of freaking English, but like you said, he got the submission of the year on your book. Mr. Francis Ngannou, the guy looked like a freaking Greek god. He got knockout power. Now we know that he gets some skills in the ground, too. He can rip your arm off. And I think that if they groom him right and they give him the right fight, he's fighting Andrei Arlovski next. I like the fight. I really like the fight. I think Francis Ngannou is a star in the making. So that is my pick, a little bit of a dark horse, no pun intended, Francis, and now you're dark as fuck.
Oh, that's awesome.
But Francis Ngannou is my pick.
Oh, man. All right, guys. For me, I was going to go with Mickey Gall until Proteus chose him, and not because he chose him, it's just because I do think he's going to be a star. But I'll tell you who I chose, and this, and you know me, guys, I see things level-headed. I'm not one to be swayed anywhere, but I gotta be honest with you, I think it's going to be short term. It's going to be Michelle Waterson. And yeah, you're saying, well, she's 30 years old, she's fought for years, she fought at Strikeforce. But she gained 50,000 Instagram followers in one night. And everyone's talking about her right now, guys. And she gets another big victory with someone, whether it's Rose Namajunas, whomever it is. I think the Karate Hottie has a good story with her documentary coming out, etc. So I'm going to give it to the Karate Hottie, Michelle Waterson.
I'm not about that pick. I'm not about that pick at all. And she's a hot topic right now.
Absolutely.
Give her the
all
title
right, guys.
Fight. Give her the title fight. I'm calling for it right now. Ooh. Give her the title fight. Why not?
I don't want her to get beat up. Oof. All right, guys. Let's go. As we go with the fumes running, here we go. The last, of course, show of the year for us, guys. For Smack My Picks Up. Of course, we're back on in January, guys. But let's go to our bold prediction. For 2017, we go to the star of the show, the one and only Marco. Bold prediction for 2017.
Okay, here is my first bold prediction. Conor McGregor will not hold any babe at the end of 2017.
Damn.
I think, that's bold.
I still
think Diaz-McGregor happens at the end of next year, but it won't be for any belts. I think Stipe Miocic is going to be able to break the more than two defenses record for heavyweights. So he's going to have probably three. and picking the Stevie to win his next fight and then win one more as a heavyweight champion. And then getting the conversation of best heavyweight ever, because I really like Stevie. I think that all these talks about unions are going to start dying down because the people that they cannot get their shit together. And it's going to be another year of people saying they're going to do it and they're not going to do it. And the war is not going to end, even though Donald Trump is the damn president, because people are going to try to kick him away from that damn button.
Yeah, I think that my bold prediction for 2017 is going to be a little bit opposite from Marco. I think that Tim Kennedy, the second greatest American in existence, will get this union association, together. He will get these fighters together, and we will see change happen. I think that the class action lawsuit is still looming for the UFC and for the Empire. I think perhaps that that's going to be something that's going to come into fruition and open up the floodgates of... Thank you, Tony. Open up the floodgates of the UFC not being able to conduct their business in the same way that they have been. We are seeing a more than one-sided attack against the Empire, and you know how that happened when the what happened in the movies, that you know the rebellion did end up winning. So I think that's my bold prediction for 2017. The union or the association will take over.
This will be the end of your pathetic rebellion.
All right, Dana.
Thank you, dummies.
All right, guys. Yeah. Here's the thing.
Did you do a bold prediction?
Yeah, well, I'm going to do it right now. If this was 2018, my bold prediction would be the fact that ESPN actually does a deal with the UFC.
Of course.
But it isn't. So my bold prediction. Now, I was actually, I'm going to steal one from Kel. So I was torn between two, but I'm going to give you one. So from Kel Dansby on his podcast said that Ronda Rousey.
Excuse me, bitch.
Yeah, there you go. Excuse me, bitch. Right. That Ronda Rousey is not only going to win one belt, but she's going to go up to 145 and win that belt too. So I actually think that that's viable. But my bold prediction will be this, guys. For 2017, Bellator is going to sign, if not one, two big UFC names. And I think it's going to cause some competition there, guys.
Who do you think? Gun to the head. Who do you think? Well,
Larkin isn't a big enough name, so no. I don't know who's available, but I do think Larkin goes there, and I think
you think GSP?
I don't think he can get out of his contract
and go to Bellator.
That's what I'm saying.
So no, okay. No.
I don't think he can.
I don't think they can afford him.
With sponsors, they might be able to, brother.
GSP
money is very real.
Okay, GSP demands on pay-per-views alone at close to $10 million, dude. So I don't see the camera for him.
Right. I'm just trying to cause trouble here. So let's go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, I know.
Do whatever you're doing.
All right, guys. Well, let's get the heck out of here, right?
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
And of course, we want to tell everyone Merry Christmas,
Merry
Happy
Christmas,
Hanukkah.
You filthy animal, and a Happy
Thank
New
you.
Year.
And a Happy New Year and everything else, right, Marco? Kwanzaa and all this and all that. And I'm sure I'm missing
for the weekend.
So let's get out of here, Marco. So, Proteus, from my the man in the frozen tundra, anything that you want to give to our listeners? Well, keep in mind we're having a party tomorrow, but anything you want to give?
Yeah, I want everybody to tune in tomorrow. Listen, guys, we are going all out. You know how much stress I've been planning this show right now for tomorrow night? We said we might not do a show. It turns out that we're doing a huge show tomorrow night. Stay tuned. We have an hour of a round table with top journalists in the world They happen to be all Canadian, but tune in anyways. And then we're having an open Christmas party for the AMP Radio Network. We're going to have as many people as we can have on. I think, if I'm not mistaken, we're going to have Gorgeous George on at the beginning of the second hour. Is that right, Tony?
100%.
Oh, that's confirmed. Excellent.
Yes, sir.
So all you AMP Radio listeners, all the other listeners, you knuckleheads, you better tune in. You better tune in.
That's right.
Don't make Lord Dana, you know, go get you.
Yes, man. Tune in tomorrow. We're having a huge show tomorrow, man. I don't even know if we're going to be able to pack it in, Tony. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to fit it all in. But tune in tomorrow.
Excuse me?
And guess what?
That's what she said, right?
Oh, wow. Let's not go there. Hey, and my much-watched TV of the week is Hunting Hitler. Go ahead, Marco.
Oh, let's hear from the star of the show, Marco.
Must-watch TV. I've been stuck on this freaking ghost show. So watch A Hunting. If you like creepy stories of haunted houses, watch A Hunting. You'll be creeped out, and you want to keep the lights on at night.
Ouch, that's actually kind of scary, no?
Yeah. I don't even want
all right,
to
guys.
On that.
Yeah, believe it or not, and I told this to Proteus, but my must-watch of the week, guys, is Leah Remini's Scientology and the Aftermath. You know, that's the one thing. I don't know if you guys know, the Scientology is based out of Clearwater, so we should ask the Clearwater about that one of these days. But, yeah, that's my show to watch, guys. Scientology and the Aftermath on A&E. Twitter follow of the week, Proteus. What you got?
Yes, sir. I'm going to go with our boy who's going to I'm going to give a little bit of away of the show tomorrow. E. Spencer Kite of the province out of BC, Ontario, Canada. I'm going to give him a shout out, and I'm going to give him my Twitter follow of the week. Thank you, Tony.
Wow. All right. And Marco, the star of our show.
You know I don't do the Twitter follow, so follow me at Maldo Marco. Follow Proteus at Proteus. Follow Tony at DJ Tony. Follow the podcast at Another MMA Cast. And if you're not following up, people, what's wrong with you? With that, I leave you guys. Catch you guys.
Catch you tomorrow.
Next year. Yeah.
Oh,
enjoy
nice.
The fight. Happy holidays.
I think that's perfect, guys. Yeah, I think that's perfect, guys. Marco said it perfectly. And like that. Whew.
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal, and a happy new year.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.